This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk.
Before we get into this week's episode with our guest, Shauna Smith, we just wanted to give you a heads up as to some of the content throughout the course of the episode, in particular when Shauna's talking about her memories as a child and the subsequent book that she's written. References are made to her relationship with her abusive father. So if you decide that this episode isn't for you, we completely understand, and we will be back at the same time next week.
The Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Oh, hi, my name's Jeanette, and I'm now alcohol-free for around 150 days, which is a miracle, to say the least. I've been trying to go alcohol-free for about a decade, on and off, doing a month here, a week here, 2 months here, you know the score. But now I'm 150 days in and absolutely loving it. Life is so much better. Being part of the OTI community has helped me vastly. It's fun. It looks at what you're gaining, not what you're missing out, which was a mistake I made before. I always thought I was missing out on life when I wasn't drinking. Oh my God, how wrong was I? Life is great without a drink. Just try it.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. As always, it is ace to have you listening. We're going to keep the intros brief today, or at least try to. My name is Sharon Hartley. I am based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. Next month, in just a couple of weeks' time, I'll be 6 years alcohol-free. Woohoo! I still get giddy. Don't count days anymore, but I do like a big chunky milestone. I took a break from booze back in September after the summer holidays in 2018. A reset to learn how to moderate, and then I was going to get fully back on it. Something ace happened. In fact, some people might say it was the life-changing magic of stopping drinking.
Two authors on one podcast.
Sorry.
Right. You're not technically yet. You are on the 2nd of January 2025.
2nd of January 2025. Yeah, the life-changing magic of quitting alcohol. I'd suggest you stop drinking and you start living. But anyway, that's an episode for another day.
Available to pre-order now.
Not yet. Hold that thought. And you know what? Genuinely, the best thing I ever did. So I'm chuffed a bit. It's Ben Anderson. How the heck are you?
Fine, thank you. I'm Ben. I am not an author. I am 36. I live in Liverpool. I'm a dad. Me and Chaz do OTI together. Have done now for 4 years. Crazy.
Long time.
Yeah, I'm over 4 years alcohol free myself. I gave up in July 2020. I'd had a particularly boozy summer to that point. It was out of lockdowns and it was my birthday, and I was only going to give up for 3 months. But then that became 6, then 12, and then just kept on going. And Sharon, for me, as you know, because I keep on saying it, for me, fulfilling my potential was more important than refilling my glass.
And you know what? I mean, I don't want to make you too giddy, but that quote might feature in a book that's coming out in January 2025.
You're nicking my quote. Brilliant.
Excuse me. Attributed to the one and only
credit.
Ben Anderson.
Yeah, thank
full
you.
Credit.
I don't know where I nicked
full
it from.
Full credit.
No, but in all seriousness.
And we said this to be brief and it's not.
Yeah, in all seriousness, removing alcohol for me, it wasn't a must at the point that I did it. You know, I didn't have to stop drinking. I don't know where my drinking was going. I know it was on a slippery slope, but choosing to give up drinking when I did has just opened so many doors for me since I did. And I'm just so grateful for it. Right. Yeah. Over to the authors.
Ace. Really,
by the way, can I just say, in case she doesn't say it, but before we started recording, Shauna said, I've got loads of great things to say about OTI and why it's great for me in this podcast. And we both went, awesome, great.
Awesome. Yeah. We're going to start with that
then.
It gives us a great pleasure to welcome Shauna Smith to the podcast. Now, we need to say thank you. We always say thank you, but in particular for the effort that Shauna has made this morning. She's based just west of Sydney in Australia. So as we record this podcast, we do it every single Tuesday at 6 o'clock our time, which is perfectly reasonable. Shauna's had to set the alarm and it's just gone 3 a.m. in the morning. Shauna, thank you. I mean, you know, credit to you for doing it.
What are you doing, Shauna?
It's exciting. It was exciting thinking, oh, I must get, I kind of thought I was going to get in a plane and go to the airport or something.
It was that exciting, was it? Join us on the podcast.
No, but you know, that's usually when I get up so early, it's because I'm going somewhere, but it's good. And also the house is quiet, so that's very helpful.
Fantastic.
Do you usually wear your tartan dressing gown on the way to the airport, Shauna? Because you can take the girl out of Scotland.
No. I know this is actually, I love this tartan dressing gown. It's from Marks and Sparks and I bought it in Edinburgh just before my first son was born. And I absolutely love it. So it's in pride of place here with me this morning.
She looks so cozy, doesn't she? She's like all wrapped up in a dressing gown. She's got a mug of tea on the side. The lighting is dim and you've got me and Ben blaring in your ears,
yep.
Shauna. So thank you. We really appreciate it. We have got so much to talk about during the course of this episode. We're going to talk about your book, which is brilliant, Going Under, a memoir of family secrets, addiction and escape. We're going to hear about your story. But yes, we are going to kick off with why you think OTI is brilliant.
Because you're a community member, Shauna. You know, we've known you,
yeah,
known you for
a
long time.
Yeah, I'm a community member. Yeah, that's right. So I didn't join OTI when I first stopped drinking. I think it was probably about 2 years in. I'm a year behind you, Sharon, or actually, I'm going to be 5 years at the very end of November.
Brilliant.
So I'm a little bit behind.
Amazing.
I had been sober for a while and I had been writing this memoir, started it fairly quickly after I stopped drinking, but it took many years to write. But the thing is, one of the things that I tapped into and sort of felt the feelings of was regret or distress at having left the UK. And when I joined OTI, which somebody kindly told me about, I met this woman who wasn't drinking and she said, oh, Amanda, and she said, I'm part of Over the Influence. But what I really loved was tapping into the British sense of humour and all the magnificent accents that you get and just feeling as if I'm connected to the UK in some way.
Oh, I love that.
And whenever I see you up mountains and then you know, in Wales and up Ben Nevis in Scotland, I just feel as if I'm part of something and that I'm enjoying listening to British people talking, seeing beautiful places. I actually was not a hill walker. I've never climbed Ben Nevis in my life, but I do have an ambition to do it with you one day.
Oh, Shauna.
And it's been really soothing from that point of view. So on the Zooms, you know, hearing people from all over the country is really enjoyable. And then just going into the forums and seeing where people are at and where they come from. I know there's people from all over the world on OTI, but for me, it just came at a point when I wanted to feel a little more tuned in to the UK. So very helpful, as well as also just, you know, reflecting or listening to other people talk is very helpful at keeping you on the right track. Not necessarily with drinking, because I do not want to drink. Like, you couldn't pay me to drink. But I just need to hear other people who are also making changes in their lives or facing things that come up as you unpeel the onion after you stop drinking. So I found it really pleasurable and helpful.
I'm really glad you said that, Shauna, because people join OTI and especially if they're a bit further along, you know, they've been alcohol free for a while. They think, oh, should I, shouldn't I? Is this for people in their early days? And it really is for everyone, isn't it? You know, we've got people from all different stages within OTI. I think the other thing about it is you know, everyone builds that foundation by removing alcohol, but what you build on that foundation is completely different. And I think you're right, you know, reading the forums and seeing people who are kind of actively looking to improve. It might not be something that you fancy, you know, you don't want to climb Ben Nevis maybe, but just the fact that they're doing it is quite inspiring, isn't it? You kind of go, what can I do? What applies to my life?
Yeah. What new things could I do? How could I stretch myself? And also a wee bit of how can I support other people? although actually I noticed I haven't been in the forums very lately because I've, I've there's a lot of things going on with the children, but that is nice just to tap in, because I can remember the early days and early days when I stopped in the past as well. And those first weddings and first nights out and things like that. And it's really good to cheer people on as they're doing that. And also to help to pat people on the back and say, don't worry if you fall off the wagon. You know, who stops and stays stopped? I know some people do, but I certainly didn't, you know. And so it's good to just be there encouraging people as well. Helps you stay sober yourself, I think. Mm-hmm.
It's massively important that. And we're really, really chuffed that you found us and that, and that you mm-hmm. joined the community. Shauna, you mentioned that you're coming up for, it'll be 5 years alcohol-free this year. What's your life like now as a non-drinker?
Well, it's a lot calmer, I have to say, and more settled, I think. And lots of things have changed for the better. I used to be... A great theme of mine was always wanting to get away. And I just used alcohol as a way of numbing out, you know, from lots of different things. I definitely don't lose my temper so much at all, you know, so it's much harder for things to bother me. But the major difference for me is that I'm so much kinder to myself. There was a lot of waking up in the morning and saying, oh shit, you did it again, you're a fucking idiot, blah, blah, blah. You know, you shouldn't have done that, and why do you do it, and you need to stop. Or there was all those mornings of waking up going, what day is it? Oh no, it's Monday, I can't have a drink till Friday. Oh no, what am I going to do? Or what day is it? Oh, Wednesday, okay, two more days to go. That's when I was trying, if I was having a week when I was succeeding and not drinking during the week. But there was just so much self-abuse in the morning. All that is sort of internal, motionless frenzy that nobody else can see on the outside. But my mental health was not good at all. And that lack of trust in myself and the feeling that there was something terribly wrong with me was really distressing. And even when I did stop, like yourselves, like I decided that I had to stop because I was in a right state, and I thought I'll do a month off, and I did not expect to stop for 5 years or forever. Like, it really is forever, I'll never drink again. I didn't expect that because I didn't think that that was possible. I did not think that I could stop. I didn't think that I'd be able to manage life without this crutch or this way of just numbing my brain and stepping outside life. So it's a miracle. I still feel that. I feel so grateful. What a relief and what a surprise that I was able to stop it. And people don't believe me when I say that, but they didn't know what was happening in my brain. You know, I was a very functional person. I was. But I was also constantly doing different things and trying different things. I'm much more settled now, and I'm not trying to step out of my own life.
That's very powerful.
You know, because I was also, I really think there was a lot of me of trying to step out of the family, especially that drink at 5 o'clock when I started resentfully cooking dinner. So I, instead of sorting out why I was resentful and doing something about it, I would just numb out by having a glass of wine. And on the days when I didn't have a glass of wine, I would just be resentful. You know, so my family were served up a lot of dinner with a side of resentment.
It's interesting, that, isn't it? Because, you know, how often do we talk about that? And it's that thing of, you know, we always talk about how, you know, you still wake up the next day, you know, you drink to escape the problem, but you wake up the next day and you've still got the problem, apart from the only difference is you're dealing with the same problem, but with a horrible hangover at 50% capacity or whatever.
Yeah.
But actually, what you're saying is, you know, fix the problem. You know, don't drink to escape stuff. You just got to get stuck in the middle of it sometimes and just deal with it.
First of all, you've got to work out what the problem is, you know, and I think that just comes with a bit of time. And there were many layers. It was like peeling an onion. It really was, with a lot of tears. But the first thing to do is to stop the drinking and find something else to give you a bit of a buzz. I was a person who took to drinking a lot of alcohol-free drinks. And I did find that a clinking in the glass and a nice taste of something did give me a little buzz, and continues to do that. I went a bit mad, I think. I mean, I tend to be somebody who tries lots of different new things and gets a bit over enthusiastic about things. So I think I tried a different drink every day the first January, like when I was into, I decided I was going to not just do the month and I was going to keep going. And I was drinking all these different drinks and I was keeping myself amused and probably a little bit over obsessive, but it was giving me a buzz. And the other thing I found out was that what I loved was going out with people, and that I actually didn't need the alcohol, because I would often use, you know, going out for dinner with friends as an excuse to have a few drinks, more than a few drinks, and sometimes drink when I got home too. And I was often sailing very close to the wind with driving, because here in Australia, we live in these suburbs and you don't often walk when you go out. So I would often sort of feel frustrated when I was out with friends and come home and drink more, because I hadn't been able to drink enough when I was out. It was a messy mess. But when I went out, I found that I actually just love people. And so if I'm nattering away to somebody, it's giving me a whole load of endorphins, or I don't know what it is, but anyway, it's working.
So, I really like that.
I actually didn't need the drink. I was going out for the people. And I'm looking for a buzz in life. I'm not, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, there's nothing wrong with looking for a burst of adrenaline or nice neurotransmitters, but I get them now from jumping into the water and going swimming. I would say cold water swimming, but since I live in New South Wales, it's not that cold compared to the UK. And then from nattering away to people. And also from getting on well with my husband and chatting to the children. And then we did get a dog, which I had never got before, never would have got before, but we did. And so that's been the greatest pleasure from sobriety, is getting this little poodle.
Shaz, I know you want to ask a question, but before you do, Shauna has just given me, if I ever write my book, because obviously I'm feeling a bit left out here with sitting here with two authors.
Yeah.
It's not if, Ben, it's going to be when. It's going to be when.
You've given the title.
It's going to be when, Ben.
There, Shauna, which is Ben Anderson, that? A messy mess. I really like that phrase.
An ex-messy mess. Yeah, as was.
Messy. I quite like messy mess. That's a great phrase.
Messy mess, full stop.
Yeah, messy mess by Ben Anderson.
You've just written that down, haven't you? You've been making notes.
I've not just written it down. I've made it bold by going over it a couple of times, and I've circled it.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Sharon, you can ask your question now.
Help yourself.
Shauna, I just want to pick up on some words that you have just used to describe sobriety. You talked about the relief. You talked about feeling grateful. You talked about the surprise. And, you know, we're not too dissimilar in our alcohol-free journeys, in the amount of time we've not been drinking. And I think it's really important to acknowledge, you know, there's three of us on this chat now talking about this, and there are many, many more people listening to this and also within our community as well that did not set out to stop drinking. Okay, I didn't want to, because I thought there was no issue, you know, with hindsight, and you look in the rearview mirror, of course there was an issue, of course I was dependent, mentally dependent, oh my goodness me, you know, and I had no intention of stopping drinking because I didn't want to. And I know, you know, Ben, his intro every single week, he reminds people that it was only going to be a 30-day break. But once you've dipped your toe into the choppy waters of sobriety and you've given yourself a shot, that is where the magic does start to happen.
It does.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I just wanted to acknowledge that fact and what you're saying. I'm nodding along like that, going, yeah. But give yourself a chance. That's where it starts, isn't it?
Yeah. And I sometimes in the forum, you know, I say I wish I hadn't waited till I was 55, till I did it. Because I had stopped drinking when I was 30. In fact, I went to two weddings in Glasgow, or one in the West Coast and one in Glasgow many years ago, sober. And I had decided I had to stop drinking for a bit. So there was all these learning experiences. Those were the first two weddings, one on a Friday, one on a Saturday, that I went to. Had a great time, went dancing, and was quite surprised. And I felt great on the Sunday as well. And then I had my first son, and I didn't drink a massive amount when my kids were little, because it really did not mix with having toddlers, especially my first son, who was really a handful. But once those kids started growing up, I started grabbing the opportunities when they came up, you know, and I could see myself getting worse and worse. When I stopped once for a year, in about 6 years before I stopped drinking, again, I had all these experiences of life being better, managing to have more fun, go out more without feeling terrible, but it still didn't stick. But that was because I didn't think it was possible never to drink again. It used to make me feel so terrible just thinking about it. Whereas there was something that happened. And I think for me, it was podcasts and Quitlit that made me realize that was the difference, because there was none of that that time in 2013 when I stopped for a year. Although, of course, I really believed at the end of that year I'd be able to just be a moderate drinker. And I know lots of people who just drink a glass of wine occasionally. People that I'll go out to dinner with and they'll have one glass of wine all night, they've got no problem, you know, but I was never like that. And I was trying to become that person that could just have one glass of wine and put the bottle of wine back in the fridge. Who could buy a bottle of wine to make a spaghetti bolognese and just put it in the spaghetti bolognese and not scarf the rest of the bottle?
I don't know.
But so lots of people are like that. But it was just coming to terms with the fact that I wasn't like that and that it was all right not to be like that. Like is it 15-20% of people do drink far too much? I'm one of those people. It's okay to be one of those people. And it's okay to have a drink problem, because when you stop drinking, the problem goes away. It's been a revelation, and it still is a revelation. And I think also that's why it's lovely to be in the community, because you're just with other people who are having this experience. A lot of people I know will never know what it's like to wake up in the morning and berate themselves. They just don't have that problem. But I like being with people who do have that problem and who've addressed it. You know, they're my people.
I love what you said then about podcasts and, you know, Quitlit, etc., being around and kind of showing you that, you know, other people just like you are doing this and making this choice. It's reminded me of a new quote I've got on my quote board.
Here we go, Sean. Strap in.
We know that a lot of people listen to this for inspiration. You know, they haven't stopped drinking yet. If you're one of those people, then just listen to this, because I love this. It's from a painter called Chuck Close. You've heard of him? Mm-hmm. I hadn't until I read his quote, but I like it. Inspiration is for amateurs. The rest of us just show up and get to work.
Okay, that's true.
I love that.
That's my experience of life.
It's for amateurs. The rest of us just show up and get to work. Because at some point, you've just got to do it, haven't you? You've got to bite the bullet, Shauna. You've just got to go, right, okay, I've recognised this about myself. I know where this is going. And it's not going, you know, I'm not venturing towards being that one glass of wine a night person. Like, that's not happening. Right. You know, sometimes you just got to bite the bullet, haven't you?
And I really think it's universal that if you're one of the 15 to 20% of people who have a drink problem with alcohol, it's going to get worse as you get older. And I haven't seen anybody really where things get better. It tends to get worse. So, and it will shorten your life. You know, it certainly feels shorter as well, because there's nothing worse than having a day of feeling shit when you don't have, you know, when you've tipped over the halfway point and you're heading towards the end of your life and away from the beginning of your life, you know. And I have a very, like, I want to be healthy for as long as I can. I had my twins who are 18 now. I was 42 when they were born, and remind me not to do that again. And I really want to be around for them, and I want to be healthy for them, you know, and that is not going to happen if I don't look after myself. I didn't really realize also how bad alcohol is for you, but I know now, and that has certainly put me off ever picking any up again. Even if I could have one or two, what's the point? You know, what is the point?
Yeah.
And you know, not many people think like that. So it's great to be in a wee gang of people who know. It's like the people who know, who have understood and who know that the emperor's got no clothes. And I want to be in that cool gang, having never been cool in my life.
Never mind the emperor's new clothes. Shauna's got the best dressing gown in all of the land. It's good.
It's really good. It's really good. I've also got a tartan nightie somewhere from Marks and Spencer's Edinburgh 97.
Shauna, I want to pick up on age, if you don't mind, because I've had a lot of messages recently, and I've had chats with people within the community, and all these people have been women, actually. And there's been, in the conversations we've had, a lot of regret, and people, you know, really beating themselves up going, why didn't I do this sooner? Why didn't I do this sooner? You know, you must have started this when you were 50, in your 50th year.
55.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
You stopped
at 55. I thought you said you were 55 now. Apologies, my mistake. So you did that at 55. Incredible. I did it 45, and I'm over it now, but I spent a lot of time going, why didn't I do it sooner? Why didn't I do it sooner?
Yeah, because, me too.
The more I thought about it, the more I drank, you know. We've got older people within our community, people that are doing this in their late 50s, into their 60s. I think we maybe have one or two in their 70s as well. And I just want to sort of reassure people that no matter when you do this, it is never, ever too late, is it? You still get your time back.
No, it's never too late. You do get your time back, and you get your self-respect back as well, you know, which is very important at any age. I could beat myself up, and I have in the past, because I think I was 31 and I stopped drinking for quite a while. I met my husband, who's snoozing through there, when I had stopped drinking. And I think that was really crucial. I used to say that he was my reward, or him and my first son, who came along fairly rapidly, were my reward for stopping drinking that time. And I should never have restarted. You know, for many years, I wasn't drinking a lot. But anyway, I did restart. And then when I stopped for that year, I should never have restarted. But what can you do? Like, you can learn from the past, but you can't go back. You only have got today, and they go by fast enough. There's no point wasting them, you know. So I have certainly got into thinking, I could have been a brain surgeon, you know, I could have done so much. And my career was very messy. And then I've never really worked properly since I had my children. I've always worked from home. And I have had four children. I could never have managed to work in a job where I went out to work. I'm just not organized. My husband used to go away and work. But I sometimes I have regret for that, because I think I could have had more of a proper career, you know, but actually, who cares about that as well? You know, there's just no point. It's not that you don't look backwards, but there's no point beating yourself up or having terrible regrets. I have gone through that. As I said before, there are plenty of things that I feel upset about living in Australia, not living in Scotland. And I could say, yes, I've got regrets about that. But again, I can just try to give myself some Europeanness back. I will spend a bit more time there. But the fact is that I came to Australia when I was in my 20s, and then I met Paul when I was living in Glasgow, and I was flipping and flopping around between the two countries. But we have lived here as a family for 20, I don't know, a long time, this whole century. The three of the children were born here. They're very Australian. Nobody's going anywhere. This is where I live. So I've got to embrace that and try to have some of the joy of my background without feeling terrible about it, you know. Of course, there are times in life when you do feel really upset, and then it's worth having a good cry. But just to hark on it and to let yourself be too regretful is not good for your mental health, is it? So you've got to kind of just be looking at the day and looking forward, if you can.
Aren't humans just a pain in the ass?
Oh, like sometimes that
whole grass is greener mentality.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you know, you're talking about you wish you'd done it sooner. Mm. One of the hardest things that I found, because I stopped drinking when I was 32, and one of the thoughts I had in my brain was, I'm doing this too early. I can get
through
with it. You know
isn't
what I mean?
That would be mad. I really wish I'd never started again and never picked up after each child, you know, was born. And then it was really when the twins went to school, everything just got a lot easier at certain points. And it was like I was just waiting for them, because it was always that urge to drink. And it wasn't even partying. Like, I'm a pretty sociable person, but I was drinking at home on my own when my husband used to go and work away for a month at a time. And I was waiting till the kids went to bed and then I was opening bottles of wine because that was my reward. But I mean, really, women, it really upsets me that women think that it's a reward or the appropriate reward for the hard labour you've done. I know men work hard too. But anyway, just thinking about that mummy wine culture is that you do something that is going to give you breast cancer and a hangover. I mean, it's really, really not good. And that makes me very angry that it's promoted as something that women deserve or women need. And I'm, you know, I'm upset that I bought into it for so long and thought it was funny. But you don't know what you don't know till you know it, you know. So,
also, I just want to say, Ben, 32, doing this at 32, I am so chuffier. And I know Shauna will feel the same. I'll say you've saved yourself a decade of pain. You know, in Shauna's case, two decades. It takes balls to do it at whatever point, but the sooner, you know, the better. And I think every creator. Yeah,
but, you know, the point is that there's never a good time.
No.
At all. You know, there's always, your brain will always create a reason why now isn't the right time. Yeah. And actually, it's the importance of that kind of the mindfulness, not in the sense, you know, not mindfulness in terms of sitting on top of a mountain, you know, fingers together humming, but that kind of being present in the moment thing, you know, forget about the past, don't worry about the future, just be here and now. Is it a good choice for me today to not drink? Yeah, it is. Okay, well, I'll do that then. And then tomorrow, is it a good choice for me to? Yeah, I think it is. You know. Anyway, what do I know? I'm not the author. I haven't written a book about alcohol.
You're a future writer. I feel
intimidated
by
us two authors on this call.
You know what? I really do. I'm going to write down some long words.
I mean, this is being Shauna. Come on.
It's very cool that you've done it. I mean, can we talk about the book now, Shauna? Is it time?
Go on.
So it's called G'day, Mate.
No, you had Ben. No. Come on, of all the jokes.
I'll come up with some good titles. Stick This Where the Sun Does Shine. No, I'm just trying to. Anyway, I've not pre-thought about this, as you can tell. What's it called, Shauna?
So it's called Going Under, and it really because it's
good.
About the year
good.
Before
that's
I went
that's
under.
Great. Yeah. Going Under. Love that. So that's really clever.
Yeah. So it was actually, this took a long time to write and it had a few iterations before the final work that we have here. And I called it for a long time, I was calling it The Year I Drowned because I thought that year before I stopped drinking. So when my mum died at the beginning of 2019, it was, and we moved house and Paul stopped working and my two big boys left home. And I just got madder and madder and madder as that year went on until I really was in a bad state and stopped drinking and miraculously felt better. Anyway, so things were really snowballing that year. A lot of that was to do with coming to terms with the past and the fact that lots of things were being posted out to me from Scotland. So letters and diaries and all these things were coming out that year to me. Crockery and all sorts of things that I had sort of inherited from my family. But anyway, the publisher did not like my title as well at all. So Paul thought of it Going Under. So I really like that. And I think, so Sharon's book is about stopping drinking or how to stop drinking and what to do, isn't it? So mine is all the why. It's a really good idea because it's a sort of look at how terrible I felt and what I was doing and how I was feeling for the 11 months before I stopped drinking, with also lots of backstory about my family and about my drinking when in my 20s, which was well and truly out of control and caused me all sorts of trouble. That was like trouble out loud that people could see. Whereas I think in my 30s and 40s and early 50s, other people didn't think I had a drink problem at all. It was in my head was the problem. But I was really good at not showing and not telling people, except many therapists. And also, when I did stop, I did go to AA that year as well. So I had talked a lot then. In fact, when I stopped in Glasgow, I had gone to quite a few open AA meetings as well. But anyway, but writing this, it took a long time, but it was a lot of the things that I wanted to get out of my head were things that had happened to me as a child with my dad, who was a terrible drinker and who was aggressive and violent at times as well. And that had to come out. And I don't think I was going to be able to put it behind me until I had written it down. So I had been waiting to write some of these stories. Like even as a young child, I knew that I was going to write this down one day. And I kind of knew that I wanted to wait until both of my parents had passed away. But they died. So my dad died quite young. And in fact, he had dementia, which was never properly diagnosed. He probably had the alcoholic dementia by the time he was 65. And mum had dementia when she was in her mid 70s, and she died when she was only 79, which seems terribly young to me. So and that coincided with a time where I had a bit more time, and the little kids were at high school. And I did have time to start scribbling it all down, which was a big process.
Shauna, what was that process like in terms of having to revisit when you were much, much younger?
Yeah, well, I had a lot of diaries from when I was younger. So, but I also had these crystal clear memories, which are in there. And I wrote a list of all the things I wanted to write, the bad things that I wanted to get off my chest. And some of them I knew I was going to talk about in therapy, which I did that year, which I've put those in. So there was that. And then I reread some of the diaries, but I have to say I didn't reread all of my diaries because it was pretty emotional going through them. And I was just 2 years writing this stuff. So I used to sort of, sometimes I'd write 300 words, 400 words, 500 words, then I'd have to have a day off and then I'd do some more. And that was just draft. That was the very emotional part, was just getting out on paper. I also wanted to use this as a way to learn how to write creative nonfiction and set scenes and write dialogue and stuff, which I'd never done before, actually. So I'd done a lot of writing and I was used to sitting down and writing, but not to trying to get things to describe them the way they were and not try and recreate these conversations. But I had so many things and stories that I wanted to tell about the past, and especially about my mum, who never left my dad. You know, they were married for 49 years and she chose to stay with him, which I found very upsetting, I have to say, at the time. But I can see that it was her life and she was doing what was best for her. But she had managed to sort of calm things down in the house, and she taught me a lot about managing difficult people. And I also wanted to write that story. I found that tremendously helpful. The things, I don't know if you remember, but there's a bit in the book where she told me that if dad was abusive towards me, I had to pretend there was a mirror in front of my face. She sat me down, she said, slide a mirror in front of you and remember that him being abusive is actually him talking to himself. That was a really useful thing for me when I was working in television, because there were so many awful people who would shout at you when I worked in television. I hope it's not like that now. That was really notable thing that mum taught me, and I wanted to write that down. And I also wanted to write down the story of her having dementia. And so that's in there as well. And how we looked after her from afar. So I did come back quite a lot and spend time with her. And that was very nurturing for me to spend time with her in Scotland without my dad being there, and it just being peaceful and calm was lovely. But really the family story, we weren't allowed to talk about things when they happened when we were kids. So I had this burning desire from when I was a child to tell people what had happened. And also it helps you understand the big picture yourself when you write it down, especially when you write down the beginning, the middle and end. So I feel very strongly that writing down my own drinking story, the beginning, the middle and the end, has really helped me put a lid on it as well and feel that I am the author of my story. And I think that's why people are loving writing in forums. People are loving Instagram, Facebook. They're telling their story. And there are lots of lovely Quitlet books as well, because it gives you agency. Being an alcoholic or saying you're an alcoholic and going to anonymous meetings, I know it works really well for some people. But I think that for many of us, telling our story, sharing it with other people is extremely powerful. Helps you stay stopped and helps you connect to other people out in the big wide world. It's been a massive game changer. I think it was for me really helpful to be out and proud sort of thing about it.
I love that.
And to hear all those other people.
Yeah. We hear it a lot when people finally find a space, a place, a group, whatever that might be. Mm. And they can go, yeah, this is me. This is the situation. Mm-hmm. Share it. It's like the weight of the world can be lifted. I want to ask you, Shauna, by the way, thank you so much for sending me a copy. It's just beautiful.
Oh, what? Send that on.
It'll be coming your way.
I'm absolutely desperate to read it.
It's coming your way. I promise you. It is coming your way. So, Shauna, thank you. When somebody has read that book that doesn't know you, you know, that has never met you before, that, you know, not part of the Over the Influence community, what do you want them to take away from it when they finished it?
I think the fact that you can come to the end of the hard things in your life and you can actually put them behind you so that you're not so affected by it. And I think that it's just acceptance for what happened in the past. I also wanted, when I was writing, so I was brought up in Scotland and we used to go on sailing holidays and run wild in the fields and pick strawberries. And so most people, I think, who were brought up in difficult circumstances, it wasn't all bad, but you have to come to work out how this all fits in your brain. Like, I felt that half my childhood was really good, my young childhood, and the other half was a terrible nightmare where you didn't know what was going to happen next and there was a lot of fear. And I carried into my adult life terrible people pleasing and treading on eggshells and things because I wanted everybody to be happy around me because I, you know, was just affected by that. So I wanted to put that behind me. You know, I want to have a good many years of my life where I'm enjoying myself and I'm not so affected as I was back then. And I just also wanted to look at the full picture. So there are bits in there about my dad that, like, there are some terrible stories about things that he did, but there's also happy stories. I wanted to put that in, I think it's the fifth chapter in May, or is it April? But anyway, some happy stories from there as well, because I'm trying to tell the full picture. So I think people will relate to my drinking, how I felt when I was drinking, the story of the drinking. I'm hoping that anybody who had an alcoholic father or a disrupted childhood will also relate to that and know that, you know, there can be a lot of peace to be found at the end of parents' lives. It's not like when you've had a really coherent, happy childhood or family life that's been more functional when your parents die. Like when my dad died, even though he was no trouble at the end of his life, it was still a relief when he died, you know, because watching him kill himself with alcohol, especially towards the end of his life, it was a terrible. It was so painful. But even when he was being wild and drinking, it was still so painful to watch somebody destroy themselves in the way that he did. But I came to terms with it, I think. I accepted not just his death. It was harder to accept Mum's death, but there was that as well. But you have to accept the lives that they led. The choices that they made was theirs. And the choice that I make in my life is mine. So yeah, I have also tried to be funny in it because life is also quite funny. And I've tried to have some lightheartedness. And I also was really trying to describe the life in Australia versus the life in Scotland. And it was very enjoyable to look at lots of old photographs and to think about the countryside in Scotland and to try and write about that too. And to look around here at this beautiful country that I live in and describe all of that. So yeah, but I think, you know, when you read a Quitlet book and you can relate to the stories because you were there, you had the same sort of feelings, I think that there's this great urge to give back in that way, as well as to get a lot of things off my chest. I actually think I have now got everything off my chest and I've got nothing more to say, really. Finally.
What now?
After a lifetime of gabbing.
And that is the end of the episode. Shauna, thank you.
Yeah. So I won't be bending my friend's ears so much.
It's fabulous. I can't wait to read it, Shauna.
Thank you very much.
I mean, it's very clever. first of all, you know, that whole year before. I love that kind of concept. And obviously, you know, using that to go back and tell all these stories. You know, we are very different people. You know, we are, you are a mom of four living in Australia. No risk of you losing that Scottish accent, though, is there, after 20 odd years over there? You know, I'm living in Liverpool. I'm a dad. You know, we're very different. But I think that's why I love these conversations. And, you know, what you're saying then about kind of you want to be the author of your own story, you know, this sense of autonomy, this, you know, being in control. You know, I said, we are very different, but that was such a strong, you just reminded me of things, you know, maybe I need to change up my intro for the podcast, because actually one of the main things for me in 2020 when I gave up was that we were so out of control. You know, so many things were being dictated to us and we were told how to behave and how to act and interact. You know, I needed that. I needed something in my life that I had control over. And it's just, I love these chats because, as you said at the beginning, we never know where they're going to go. But there's like, you're on the other side of the world. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. Well, nearly four o'clock in the morning where you are now.
She can go back to bed in a minute.
Like, we live very different lives, but actually a lot of our, and we've had very different experiences, but a lot of our motivations are the same. And I think that's really, really interesting. Yeah. And I suppose why people do listen to this, for that inspiration. Yeah.
And people need, human beings need connection. It makes us all feel good. So, and nowadays we've got the digital world, we can be connected. All humans crave connection, don't we, and community. And I've certainly always been like that. So I'll just add something in. You know, with my, I've got two sets of children, as it were. I had two boys and then I had about a nearly seven year gap. And then I had these twins. So all through the twins' high school years, I've not been drinking, and it's been so much better because they, like all these teenagers, do wind you up somewhat and they get into, you know, naughty things and they do this and that. And I have been so much better at dealing with it. And I haven't thrown anything at all. Whereas I did occasionally throw mugs across the kitchen in the past, but I just feel as if I have been a much better parent. And again, I don't beat myself up for what happened in the past. I didn't do anything terrible. And luckily, I never needed to drive children to hospital at night, because I would not have been able to many evenings. But really, I'm very pleased. And I'm on the cusp of all of them leaving home, because my younger two will leave home next year. I don't know what I'm going to do with myself. But I can really feel proud that I brought them up much better. And I have to say, you know, compared to my own upbringing, my kids' life has been a piece of cake. And I'm really proud of that. You know, I'm very pleased with it. Yeah. I just have this feeling of having been liberated, you know, from alcohol, or from the part of myself that thought they needed alcohol. And it's, as I said before, it's just an ongoing relief to me.
I very quickly want to end this episode with a review that has been written about your book. So we'll give the title again, Going Under, a memoir of family secrets, addiction and escape. And this review says here, with a tender touch, Smith contemplates the two truths of her childhood, the wild island adventures and the brutal eruptions behind closed doors. Standing on the precipice of her own alcoholism, she realises that reckoning with the past is the only way to shape the future. And those are the words of Jenny Valentish, author of A Woman of Substances. Yes,
amazing.
Who's also been on this podcast. So what a brilliant way to wrap up this episode. That review is amazing. Shauna, you are amazing. Me and Ben have, I can tell by his face and the fact he's been scribbling loads of notes through the course of this episode as well. We've both really, really enjoyed that. Thank you for getting up at the crack of sparrows on the other side of the world. You can go to bed now. Shauna Smith, very quickly, where can people buy your book?
Well, in the UK, it won't be in bookshops, but it will be online. So Amazon, Audible, any online bookshop will have it. I think you can go into bookshops and ask to order it and things like that. And all around the world, it should be available on all online bookstores. And then in Australia, it's in the bookshops, hard copies in the bookshops. And thank you so much for having me, and having a chat with you is well worth getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning for.
So if you would like to buy a copy of Shauna's book, it's called Going Under, a memoir of family secrets, addiction and escape. It'll be available online and in bookshops in Australia from the 1st of September.